You're listening to The Local Maximum, episode 215.
Time to expand your perspective. Welcome to The Local Maximum. Now, here's your host, Max Sklar.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome. You've reached The Local Maximum. Welcome to the show. We have an extra episode this week because of the fast news week in order to get content about Ukraine out relatively quickly. As you know, I was in Ukraine to teach at the Lviv Data Science Summer School back in 2019. And now, you know, I'm seeing a lot of the places I've been to become the target of war, which is insane. I've never seen anything quite like this. I started to reach out to some people that I met there to see, you know, how they're doing, and maybe we'll see if anyone else wants to be on the show. But first, I thought I'd talk to Polina Shevchenko, who was in my class on Bayesian thinking back in 2019 and is currently a lead marketing data analyst at a company called Bolt in Tallinn, Estonia. But more relevant for today, Polina grew up in the Donetsk, Ukraine region, forgive my pronunciation, Donetsk, Ukraine, which, as you know, is one of the cities in the far east of Ukraine, which in many ways is at the center of this global conflict. So we're going to get into a little bit into the background today, but we're not going to get in too deep because I think the best thing that I can do on this show is to bring you personal stories, as, you know, particularly up-to-date information that's accurate is very difficult to come by these days. But you know, I'm sure we'll be going into more of the background as the weeks go by. And we'll get more current information as weeks go by, but up to the minute stuff, as you know, is very difficult. I apologize, first of all, in advance for the sound for the first 10 minutes of this episode, which is from my computer and not from the Zoom here, which is, because, you know, it's totally listenable, but I was so focused on the story, and this you know, this whole thing is a little bit, is pretty intense, so I forgot to turn on my Zoom for the first 10 minutes. So apologies there. Please power through it. It's mostly Polina talking, so it's fine. Polina also gave me a link for donation ideas, which I will talk about at the end, including the Red Cross and some crypto Bitcoin donation spots, which is actually turning out to be a big deal here. But let's get into the interview. Polina, you've reached The Local Maximum. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Max.
Hi. I just want to say, first of all, it's really good to see you again. And, you know, I'm thinking about you and everyone who I met in Ukraine. I know you're not in Ukraine right now, but I thought, you know, I just wanted to get your stories. I'm doing this podcast, so, you know, that seems to be the best thing I could do right now. I don't, you know, we're watching this from afar, what's going on, and you kind of feel like there's nothing you could do. So it's like, you know, I don't know, but I feel really bad. But first of all, I just want the audience to meet you. So tell me a little bit about what you do and where you are now, and then we'll get into like where you grew up.
Yeah, of course. So, well, I'm Polina. I live in Estonia right now, but I'm from Ukraine. I moved 6 years ago. Here in Estonia, I mainly work at Bolt. So it's a large techno startup, or let's say scale-up company that is mainly operating in Europe and Africa.
It's called a Bolt, just to make sure I got that right.
Bolt, yeah.
Bolt, okay.
Yeah, it's ride hailing, it's food delivery. I work there in MarkTech and data analytics. And as I said, I'm originally from Ukraine. Obviously I identify as Ukrainian. The last 4 days were even more, they were completely ridiculous and scary and horrible. So definitely appreciate everyone and you, Max, in particular, reaching out and offering help in any way that you can and find suitable for you at this time.
So you're not just from Ukraine, I understand. Are you from? You're from the eastern side. That now are you from Donetsk?
Yes, I'm from Donetsk.
Okay. So you probably never thought that your hometown would become like the center of world
you know,
no,
of world geopolitics. But, you know, tell me a little bit about that. Like, what was it like? What is your, what was your hometown like? Did you grow up there like your whole childhood? Like what? Tell me about it.
Yes. Well, I'm almost 30 now. I turned 29 last week. And okay. The first 21 years or something I spent in Donetsk. I was born there. I grew up there. I went to school and uni there. It was totally normal. Let's say we never were particularly Ukrainian, but I would honestly say that maybe for the first 20 years or so of Ukrainian independence from Soviet Union, most cities were not like vocally Ukrainian besides far west of Ukraine. So we were just, I don't know, we were just people from Donetsk, I would say, living like regular life, not being particularly prone to thinking that we are Ukrainian or Russians.
I'm trying to do the math in my head. I'm usually pretty good at this. So you were born after the Soviet Union, or not, probably not long after, right? Am I making that correct?
Yeah, Soviet Union, Ukraine gained independence in 1991 in August.
Right.
And I was born 1.5 years later in 1993.
Right, right. Okay, cool. So, that's really interesting. So where... what was your kind of, so you were there for 21 years, you were there until 2014. Okay. So, you know, was the political situation that caused you to move or the job situation or something else?
Well, like, I don't know the best way to put it. I think was just life in a way. Because right. We actually, we left Donetsk with a couple of friends actually during the whole weird, horrible occupation stuff that was going on. But it was still fairly calm. Like we already had some small bombings and people with the guns on the streets. But like there were no large-scale bombings. People weren't hiding in bomb shelters. So it still felt like, I wouldn't say like a joke, but it didn't really feel real. And
right.
I was 21 at the time. Like, of course it was horrible and scary, but it still felt like it cannot be real.
Right.
So we didn't particularly leave because of that, but it was summer. So me and my friends, we were done with our exams and we thought, okay, like it's summer anyways, it's horrible situation at home, we can go. We went to volunteer in another region of Ukraine, and it was almost 8 years ago. And yeah, 8 years ago, and I've never come back home.
Oh wow! So do you still have family there and like and yeah. friends there?
I won't say that I have many friends there. I have some classmates. I do have family there.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you been in touch with them recently? How are they doing?
Yeah. Of course. It's always been hard there, like since, again, like there is no proper definition for that, but since the Republican stuff started there, now I guess it's even harder because, the war that is going on right now in Ukraine, it's bringing additional difficulties to that part of of Ukraine as well. It's also not very easy to talk to people, to even families, because politics can be very dividing when you have different political views or even sensitive political views after being on very different sides of the spectrum for years. It's really hard to discuss that.
Yeah, I mean, that's happened here in the US a lot recently. I mean, it was, for me, it was kind of nice to move and kind of get in a place that was a little more chill. I don't want to start going into my tale because the rioters in my town were nothing compared to what you guys are going through. So Okay, so you're in Estonia now. So how did you end up in Estonia? Was it just the job of Balt, or was it other? I mean, my understanding is there's more like job opportunities in Estonia. Is that correct? Or
I wouldn't say so. No? Like there are definitely lots of very interesting job opportunities. That's for sure. But Ukraine is much bigger. Ukraine is also very specific with taxes. So if you aren't particularly interested in the betterment of your society, you would rather maybe stay in Ukraine. What I mean by being particular with taxes is that we have official 5% tax for many people who work in IT. So it's very different, of course, with the taxation that most of European countries have. But why I moved here? Well, I moved here 6 years ago. And back then, honestly, I moved here with my partner who got a job offer here in one of the startups in Estonia. But after that, why I stayed is, I made my wife here. It's also much calmer place than Ukraine, or at least, it definitely used to be. Right now, it definitely is. I built a life for myself here, so I stayed.
Cool. Well, I mean, I'm glad you're out of harm's way, and it's easy. It's crazy to see earlier I was looking at pictures of like the train station in Lviv of like all the people trying to crowd. And I was like, holy crap, I was there. I was there at like 6 a.m. that one morning when I was traveling
actually,
around.
I saw this video, I think as well. And I thought, oh my God, the last time I was there when I was going from this data science school that you and I met together.
Right.
Not like a completely different world.
Yeah. It's hard to believe. So much stuff happened. That was 6 months before COVID. So, I mean, really? It feels like, yeah.
Yes. Oh my God. It's like forever ago.
I know. It feels like a million years ago. So I guess one more thing about like Donetsk, and I feel like there's a lot of and the eastern side, I feel like there's a lot of I get a lot of kind of talk here in the US, like people think they know everything and they're like, oh, those areas just want to be Russia, why won't Ukraine leave them alone on one side? And then like, there are people who what's really going on? Are they divided? Tell me, how would you?
I'm definitely not an expert as those Americans.
Don't say anything, get in trouble. Don't say anything, get in trouble. You can say just how you feel. And
no, I mean, honestly, like even if I would want to get in trouble, I'm so not an expert because I myself don't fully understand what is going on. Okay. It's definitely not true that everyone there still wants to be a part of Russia. Well, a lot of people who used to live there, they left.
Right.
Some of those who left, they were scared. So maybe they would prefer to stay and be a part of independent republic, be part of Russia, whatnot. Lots of people who actually stayed in Donetsk and the regions, lots of people who left, they were pro-Ukrainian or they were definitely not willing to be part of whatever was going on there. So... Yeah. I think that is very incorrect. Then, of course, like there might be different wishes at any point in time. They don't need to define us necessarily in such a strong way. Let's say like how I remember the whole situation, right? Like it all went very fast. So we just had, we had Maidan in the end of 2013, winter of 2014. So it was a time when we had, for those who don't know about that, we had massive protests going on across Ukraine, pretty much with the goal to, first we were protesting against our president and our government deciding to side with Russia instead of going with EU and moving towards joining EU as the government promised. So it started with protests against that. Then people started being beaten up, people started being killed. So it went very huge. It escalated a lot. eventually we actually won. So the president, the ex-president, he fled the country. But what was going on in Donetsk in the same time is that we also had kind of like local Maidans, so those local protests. But I think like largely because Donetsk is actually the hometown of this ex-president, and I guess he most probably felt the need to control it more. There were much more pressure and much more provocations to stop those protests. So they weren't as strong as everywhere else. Then I don't remember all the specifics, honestly, but after that, the, like they started some talks about some provocations about that we need to be an independent republic. I think our main, like not the city hall, but essentially the region hall, it got occupied by people who thought that we need to be independent. And I myself remember that it felt so strange and crazy. Like we had this, I mean, I guess we still have in Donetsk, we have this nice park where this region hall is. And it was just fully occupied with like people that you would never expect to see in the city center. Like people who would smoke on the streets. It was back then prohibited, so it's not something that you would usually see people who would just drink on the street there. So it didn't feel like a regular person from Donetsk who actually came to voice their opinion in a peaceful, even semi-peaceful way. So yeah, it went really strange, really fast. There was a lot of propaganda going on. Like I remember talking with lots of older people saying that, oh yes, like finally we can be independent and we are feeding the whole country. But I don't honestly remember, maybe I didn't notice it, but I don't remember those talks or this narrative going around before that. So it was something that suddenly appeared. We had those protesters who would go and protest for independence. But then again, like those protesters would repeat from city to city. I remember at least back then, like Ukrainian media showing that there are buses with people coming from Russia who just go around the cities going on those protests. So definitely lots of people my age, well, we would prefer for this to not happen. Lots of people of other age as well, they would definitely prefer Donetsk to stay very strong as it used to be as part of Ukraine. So I very much disagree that with what people who say that they know everything and that Donetsk just always wanted to be Russian, what they're saying. I don't know everything again, but that wasn't my experience at all.
Yeah. It makes me think like it must have been very different. Like I think about the school I grew up in and it's like, okay, like, you know, we have the American flag and we've had this for what, 250 years. Like, you know, it's been the same country. And when you were in school, you would have had teachers, you know, who probably had, they probably used to teach, it was the Soviet Union and, you know, they had to make that transition. And, you know, I almost want to ask, like, what is, like, what did your, I'm trying to think of, I don't know how to ask this question, but I'm almost thinking like, okay, like how do your parents' generation look at things differently? Because they were born in the Soviet Union, presumably. And, you know, how has your generation look at things differently? I don't know if you have any comment on that.
It changes so much.
Yeah.
Like, let's say, I think if we take the spectrum, right, then the previous generation maybe leans more towards, or used to lean more. I cannot say right now, I don't live there. I don't have that many contacts there, but used to lean, from my perception back then, more towards this whole independence narrative.
Mm.
While younger generation would lean more towards, we don't want this happening here. Then again, like I used to have, I still do, very biased circle of friends, right? So most of my friends were, of course, highly educated pro-Ukraine people who would understand what all of those suggestions would entail, or at least like partially understand. While all the people would be, I don't know, like distant relatives, some other people that I know. But yeah, definitely like some of my teachers, some of my university teachers, they were very welcoming to what was going on. It was honestly terrifying because, well, I guess you can relate to it because you think that you know the person your whole life and then you question something that is extremely valuable to both of you. So political opinions, whatnot. And it's really hard for you to distance yourself from it. You do. Sometimes it totally makes sense to distance yourself from that, but it's still, it's shocking every time. But then again, like I have teachers who moved to independent Ukraine. Independent here sounds weird. I just was talking about those independent republics, but who moved to Ukraine, to Ukrainian territory.
Right.
Who are very pro-Ukrainian.
They moved to Ukraine from where?
From Donetsk. So they used to live in Donetsk. They had their whole life there. But
right.
Then when independence came, they moved to Donetsk. They moved out of those territories.
When you say when independence came, is that that's after like 2014?
Yeah, so kind of like the timeline, right? So end of 2013, Maidan starts. I think it was the very end of February 2014 when Maidan ended. Then during spring, we had Crimea being seized by Russia. During the same time, we started having those provocations and protests in Donetsk for becoming independent. In May, I think it was like mid or end of May, Ukraine had elections of the new president. Actually, in Donetsk, we couldn't, there were no elections because they were fully blocked by those separatists. So, but instead, we had elections or kind of like the referendum for independence. And I left Donetsk in the end of June 2014. And I think on this referendum in May, referendum again, I'm saying it in the most ironic way, it was decided that Donetsk and kind of like the regions, and I think Lugansk, which is a neighboring region as well, they went in the same way.
So I want to get like, before we go, I just want to ask you, like, what has the last week been like for you? Like, what have you been doing? Like doom scrolling like the rest of us, or what's it been like?
I honestly I don't really remember what was my context for like the beginning of the week, but
it's been that much of a whirlwind that it's like,
I know,
what's even, yeah,
but I just remember that on Wednesday already I was like, I already felt so bad. We had, ironically, 24th, so Thursday is Independence Day in Estonia, and it's a free day, so it's a holiday weekend, not really sure what's the correct word, but anyways, we
gotcha.
Don't go to work. So Wednesday is also a short day, and I remember like going through Wednesday, being so completely anxious, like nothing was happening yet. There were just like lots of talks on the media that something might happen, that the war might start anytime soon, but those talks were going on for weeks.
Right.
But for some reason, like apparently for me, it reached some peak. And on Wednesday I was very anxious. I couldn't like properly work or focus on anything. But I didn't think that anything's going to happen. Definitely not tomorrow, not next day. But
right.
then I woke up on Thursday, and my boyfriend who has family in Kyiv, he said that the war has started. And I don't know, just it was completely messed up. I honestly don't even know what I felt. I don't remember in details what I felt. right now, when I'm trying to think about it, I guess it was mainly shock and eventually just feeling physically ill through the whole day.
Yeah.
Just ridiculous. Friday, it was already easier in a sense. At least I wasn't puking the whole day from the stress.
Right,
helped. And we already, at least we had the first win, because it was just so scary. I mean, definitely no way scary as for people who actually currently in Ukraine, but it was very scary. And I guess it's normal, but I would also feel very guilty that, like, we're here. How can we help? I guess on Thursday, we also were donating money and, like, figuring out the most basic stuff and preparing for worst to come during the night, because it was already clear that, like, most of the big fights, they happened during the night.
Right.
And it was scary because, I mean, Russia's army is humongous. They have a lot of manpower. They have a lot of warfare. So I don't think, like, I honestly believe that I was prepared for the worst. On Friday when I woke up, it was much better than I expected. I don't remember the specifics. I'm sorry, but.
Well, better in the sense, like, are you still in contact with people who are there?
Of course. Like, what we do right now is, of course, in contact, writing to friends where possible. Not as much as maybe needed, but honestly, I also cannot help them anyhow. Like, asking them how are you is not going to be helpful. Like, the best I can do is mobilize Estonians. Because again, like, I cannot be sending information on what to do to Ukrainians. I don't have that many, like, the wide net of Ukrainians. I haven't lived there for 6 years. What I've been doing is mobilizing Estonians as much through, like, my social media, whom I know. I know that lots of my friends have already donated money, donated any kind of humanitarian aid, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And for the last 3 days, together with other friends working in the IT sector, who mainly are from Ukraine as well, but living abroad, we were also working on solutions for how to help people in Ukraine right now. Also working with PR specialists from Ukraine or Ukrainians living abroad to spread the news. So kind of like volunteering as much as possible, because, I don't know, it really helps to take your mind off things, but I also was never as angry as I was yesterday, and helping and doing something really helps to not direct this anger inside, but to work better.
Yeah. I mean, there are going to be a lot of Ukrainians coming in, who are leaving now, are going to be in Poland and some in Estonia. I don't know. I'm sure trying to help is going to be is a good way to keep your mind off something in any crisis, and then you're being useful, I guess. So I don't know. That's how I feel. But honestly, it's tough for me to. I have so many questions, but it's tough for me to. I don't know what to say, and I don't know what to ask you in this limited time we have. But is there anything else about this experience that you want to share before we go? And obviously, we could talk again. I'm also looking forward to reaching out to other people I met on that trip. But what do you plan on doing next? What are people from inside Ukraine telling you? Maybe that's another thing that I'd like to hear.
Well, first of all, what I plan to do next is I requested a vacation. I can focus more on volunteering. Definitely cannot focus on work right now.
Yeah.
Another thing is, so what people in Ukraine are doing, so many people are doing so many different things, but I'm very proud. I never doubted it, but I'm never proud anyways to see how much volunteering we have right now. So people who actually just run away from the bomb shelters back to their house, but they do so much things, like from PR, from IT point of view, to help people in Ukraine, to help soldiers, etc. To people who are listening to podcasts, remember that you can help. You don't necessarily need to, no one expects you to, but your help matters. There are different ways you can help. You can donate. I'm pretty sure Max can link a couple of resources, what are different ways, whatever, for soldiers, for children, for humanitarian aid. You can spread the word. Please check
I'll
your
put
resources.
It on the show notes page if you can get me afterwards. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Please spread the word as well, because, well, information right now matters. I know that Ukrainians know very well what is going on. Europeans do as well, but I'm not so sure that people in other parts of the world, that they have full information.
No,
so
we only think
sharing,
we do.
Sharing methods.
Yeah. All right. Polina, thank you so much for coming on. And I don't, you know, most people come on the show, we talk about machine learning and AI, and we don't talk about such emotional issues. And so I appreciate you doing this, because I know it's not so easy of a thing to talk about, and people who have listened to my show for many years or even can even tell, like, I'm a little bit I'm a little bit tongue tied in a way that I'm usually not when I'm doing these interviews. So thank you so much. Please keep in touch. Maybe once the crisis is over, we can talk about some technical topic, and you could come back on and we could do that. I'd really appreciate that as well. And so I appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you for inviting, and yeah.
All right. This really was an incredible conversation. Polina sent me a link to supportukrainenow.org, which I said I'll post on the show notes page, which is localmaxradio.com/215, localmaxradio.com/215. I want to highlight a couple places there that I'm personally going to look into donating, one being the Red Cross, but also there's a crypto section, unchained.fund, where you could send crypto, mainly Ethereum in my case. I didn't see, that was the one that I didn't see the Bitcoin for some reason, but you could send Ethereum, and they specialize in humanitarian needs. Interestingly enough, this is the first major conflict, I think, in which cryptocurrencies are playing a major role. Naomi Brockwell, who has her own podcast and is very up to date on the world of crypto, and who's been on the Local Maximum episode 37, she tweeted recently, "Crypto is the hero for all sides in this war. Ukrainians are accepting crypto donations and fleeing the country with it. And with the Russian ruble down 40%, people who are currently being persecuted for the actions of their dictator are now able to safeguard some of their wealth. Even the Ukrainian army is accepting Bitcoin donations. They're getting tens of millions of dollars, at least I saw on the website. So it doesn't escape me also that, you know, the rise of cryptocurrencies as sound money is supposed to lead to a more peaceful future. And now, you know, armies are raising in it, but that's legitimate. If hard money replaces fiat, that would make it difficult to have these types of superpower armies that you see today. And, you know, you got to pray that something like that comes to fruition before it's too late, because things are really coming to a head. But if the ruble is down and individual Russian citizens are getting into things like Bitcoin, that might be a good start for both freedom in Russia and peace and hopefully independence for Ukraine. Ukraine has been the number 11 country in the last year. I looked this up in terms of people listening to the Local Maximum. Now, we don't have a lot of listeners from Ukraine in the last week, so, but I assume that some of you who were in Ukraine might now not be there. So still, if you're listening, I hope everyone out there gets out of harm's way and stay safe out there. And Local Maximum will return Monday night, Tuesday morning, as usual. We'll continue with a variety of topics as we normally do. It's not going to be all Ukraine all the time, but we'll also cover Ukraine-related topics in the coming weeks. Have a great week, everyone. That's the show. To support The Local Maximum, sign up for exclusive content and our online community at maximum.locals.com. The Local Maximum is available wherever podcasts are found. If you want to keep up, remember to subscribe on your podcast app. Also, check out the website with show notes and additional materials at localmaxradio.com. If you want to contact me, the host, send an email to localmaxradio@gmail.com. Have a great week.
Feel the power.